views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing
cake. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from LA, coming to you live from FEMA Region number 6. Today is November the 23rd, 2018. We have a live show for you today. Just want to thank you all for tuning in and greatly, greatly appreciate you all. At any time, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. Is the call-in number that you can use to get in contact and get into the conversation with us. Looking forward to that. And before we get going in today's show, hope everyone, for those of you that do celebrate just the overall family getting together, however you see it or choose to celebrate, hopefully you all had a great day yesterday and are ready for the rest of the year. So that is what's going, you know, that's something that is cool to get with the family and get with friends and everything else. And so it's always good to do that for no other reason. So hope you all enjoyed that engagement yesterday or in the coming days or however you're going to do it. So hopefully you do it well and you enjoy. And I just want to say thank you all for being you. So we're going to get going in today's show. But before we do that, we're going to take care of some administrative things. And that would be, everyone, please continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. So, so important that you do. You could easily do that by going to the website for this network of www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Scroll down and see the donation prompt that's there. Hit it. Give some of your financial energy so that this network can stay on air, continue to bring you the programs that you have deemed as being necessary and important. So very, very crucial in this time so that we can continue to disseminate thought, information, and to have, you know, challenges to things and to bring different things to light, even if they anger you. That's what we want to do, but hopefully it's to inform you. But for any reason, we definitely want you to think about some things that maybe have not been thought about or just to give a different perspective. It doesn't mean that anyone is right. It doesn't mean that we're right, you're wrong, or you're right, we're wrong. That's not the important thing. The important thing is to bring the overall conversation to the forefront for you to make a decision that's in your best interest or in the interest of your family. No one is going to squander at that. Get upset at that or scold that. That's very, very important. Our overall thoughtful engagement is what it's all about. And once again, with me, and I know everyone, well, I won't speak for everyone. I know with me, it's not important about being right. It's about really bringing about the process of thought, the thought process, because you actually an I and everyone else getting to who they were individually created to be, and to be sovereign and self-determining, is more important than anything else. And I hope that Tando Radio Show is a show that has angered you, you have had a different thought process or different opinion about things, but the main thing is that you're thinking about things that otherwise is not available to the mainstream, because, you know, we don't talk about a lot of things that's in mainstream, because there's enough of that already there. For me, it's not the place. I just want to bring some things to your attention and to our discussion that maybe you'll find only on Tando Radio Show. Others may be talking about them now more prevalently, but that was always my overall thought process, to get everyone to think about their self-determination. And so hopefully we are doing that, and that's the intent and purpose. And we can do that because of Black Talk Radio Network. So please support that network so we can continue to move forward in that engagement. You can easily do that by going to the website, making a donation. Also, you can support the network by being a part of the social media platform. And in the social media platform, you just go to www.btrcommunity.com and then become a member for only $24 a year, one-time yearly subscription membership dues of $24, and then you can engage in all of your social media activities that you would otherwise engage in a more harmful way on Facebook, which is not in your best interest. And what else we got there? You got Twitter, tweeting, telling, whatever. So definitely come on over to BTR Community, where you can actually engage in a more holistic engagement in the social media platform. And so you don't have to worry about your identity being stolen. Okay, so $24 a month is the only place that I post things, the only place that I will post things. I don't do anything on Facebook, same thing, or telling, tweeting, all of that stuff. Not my platform, not my space. Not needed, not necessary, not interested. So BTR Community is the only place that I do that. So come on over, $24 a month. Okay, also, if you would like to exchange your cash for money and get real money and have a measures of savings, definitely you should do that. You could do that with Prosperity Mint. Prosperity Mint is a full-service precious metals dealership. And just go to www.prosperitymint.com. Check out what's in inventory there. Then email info@prosperitymint.com. Email info@prosperitymint.com. And say, hey, I'm a Tando Radio Show listener. Dave told me to contact you all, and they will get in contact with you for just one reason, and one reason only, to explain the overall buying process. So, and I would definitely do that. So let me reply to this. I didn't see this in a while. So when you do send an email, make sure that you respond to the email. And best thing to do, give a number where someone can call you. And believe me, they're not gonna be calling you for a sales call or anything else, just in response to explain the buying process. And then that will take care of itself. Okay? So looking forward to doing that. 1 second, please. Give me 1 second. And then that will help you out. All right? So I can do this later. I'm going to have to do that later. Okay, great. So make sure you do that at Prosperity Mint. All right, so we're going to jump into today's show. Today's show for November the 23rd, 2018. The topic is the intimate present peril. And so that's what today's show is going to be all about. And we're going to take a look at some things I want you to hear and to give you a perspective of some the things that are on the horizon, and they are building quickly. So let's jump into what's in the news. We got this article. This first article got from the Sun. U.S. Celebrity figurehead U.S. Vice President Mike Pence stares down Vladimir Putin as he confronts the Russian leader over elections meddling in secret summit chat. And this is funny the way this, if you can see it, I posted there. Take a look at it. It's funny how Pence tries to stare this guy down, like, because the cameras is there. Really, it's just really, really funny. So, but disturbing in as well. Just how immature, you know, and it's comical, but it's disturbing. So check out that article real quick. It says celebrity figurehead U.S. Vice President Pence was snap giving Vladimir Putin a cold stare at a summit, and that was the ASEAN summit. As he reportedly warned him not to meddle in American elections, Putin said he and Pence spoke on the sidelines of the Asian of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations conference in Singapore to discussing arms control and other issues. And basically, at the ASEAN meeting, the overall U.S. got slapped by Russia, by China, the ASEAN nations. But there was a divide. They're trying to divide that overall. The U.S. is trying to divide that overall coalition. And so that's why he tries to get this stairs. It was hilarious. So check out that. Next article got from Russia Insider. The bankruptcy of the American empire is coming. I would not say that it is coming. It has already arrived. It's been in the process for the past 40 years. To more exact, but it's coming to full ending. That collapse will end in the overall dismantling of the disassembling of the United States Corporation of the United States of America will definitely take place. But they're saying that the bankruptcy of the American empire is coming. It's already happened. So check this out. The chickens are coming home to roost. It's only a question of when. Mr. Stern, who was the chairman of the Council of Economics under President Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, and is the father of the more well-known Ben Stein, in 1976, he created what's called Stern's Law. It's something. If something can't go on forever, it will stop. Yes, and this whole economic empire of the U.S. or the position that the U.S. have, the economy will continue. The U.S., the United States, and basically they're going to collapse the common person's economy and everyone that has ties to the overall empire, corporation empire of the United States. That is going to definitely collapse. Okay? Make yourself get as far away or seek shelter and get away from it as much as you can and provide as much immunity to that as you possibly can. And there are things that you should be doing. Contact Prosperity Mint is one. Okay, so check that out. Next article from Press TV. This is Press TV. CIA has the recordings of MBS calling to silence Khashoggi. The United States the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, is in possession of a tape that proves Saudi Arabia's crown prince gave instructions to silent dissidents journal Jamal Khashoggi. A new report has revealed through the Turkish newspaper reported on Thursday that the CIA director had signaled the existence of the recording to Turkish officials last month. And that's when they gave that overall information and to others. And this thing is really, really significant because this is a part and partial to the collapse of the United States, the purging of the U.S., the untied states of America happening. This is going to be a central piece in that or a piece in it, because as that relationship dissolves, so does the overall economic standing of the United States, which will follow its military through defeat, all in part. So check that out. Next article comes from CNBC. Bank of America says the big lows for stock isn't here yet, and the selling will continue. Check out that article. Next article from Wolf Street. Stock market margin debt plunges as most since Lehman Brothers. Stock market margin debt plunges most since Lehman Brothers. Check out that article. Next article got from Bloomberg. And this article is, I think I got to hit it, pull it up. And this one is four charts showing how the global credit market have turned sour. Four charts showing how the global credit market has turned sour. And that's very, 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 very significant. On next week, Great Creator Willing would like to play you that actual piece, because that's very critical. You need to know and prepare for it. Next article, got this from Boston Herald. Boston's pensions liabilities grows as stock values take a slide. Boston pensions obligation have increased, and Wall Street suffered another rough day. Financial watchdogs warned that a bear market could take a bite out of the giant cities, out of the gains the city had made. It's reality. Its reality relies on the market forces. So check out that article. Basically, pensions is not just Boston's pension fund. It's all U.S. dollar-based pension funds kaput and going to kaput. That is a economic truth that will make it, that will manifest itself in a very, very painful way to people. Ignoring it is not going to prevent it from happening. Ensuring and doing something to protect yourself against that is the most important thing to do. So check out that article. Next article from oilprice.com. Oil companies lose $1 trillion as price crashes. Check out that article. Next article from, Investopedia, the worst is yet to come for stocks, Morgan Stanley says. Investors are looking for solace amidst the wave of market sell-off. May argue that the S&P 500 has fallen only 9% from its all-time highs in December, hardly a devastating decline, but the statistics conceal the facts that we are already in a deep bear market and more downslide is still to come, according to Morgan Stanley. Check out that article. Next article from CNBC, Criminals Nothing But Criminals. A $9 trillion corporate debt bomb is bubbling in the U.S. economy. Yes, huge. And a lot of that is going to play out, and we'll carry that next week. Next article from Military Times. White House approves the use of force and some law enforcement role for border troops. Yesterday, the White House, on Tuesday, the White House late on Tuesday signed a memo allowing troops stationed at the border to engage in some law enforcement roles and use lethal force if necessary, a move that the legal experts have cautioned may run afoul of the Posse Comitatus Act. Forget about it. Posse Comitatus doesn't exist anymore. They've been nullifying and taking that out step by step. And it's so apparent, but you have to really know what Posse Comitatus was created for, and then you can see how it's been deteriorating at a quickening speed as of late in the past 20 years. So Posse Comitatus, no, it just exists in name only. It does not exist in practice. It just still has the name of Posse Comitatus Act, but it does not exist in practice anymore. Very, very significant, very important. We'll carry that. So yesterday, celebrity figurehead Trump closed the border down at the in California, and so that whole environment is start to build into distortion. Next article from Reuters. Gunmen attack Chinese consulate in Pakistan. Check out that article. Next article from Criminal News. Criminals Nothing But Criminal News Station, CNBC. Oil prices slumped to the lowest levels of 2018, even as OPEC considers cuts. Check out that article. Next article from Reuters. Online surges, long lines mark the start of Thanksgiving sales. I would just hope that I would not say don't look for Thanksgiving sales. We really need to move into Thanksgiving savings. This overall system has taught everybody to be a consumer, and we're consuming ourselves into deep, deep, deep poverty and disenfranchisement. So very, very important. So that's what's in the news. At any time you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056. 704-802-5056 is the call-in number. And today's show is The Intimate Present Peril is the name of today's show. So we'd love to hear from you all at any time. Just give us a call. What's up to my man, Roz? How you doing, bro? I hadn't talked to you in a little bit. I'm going to try to catch up with you before this week is over. Much love, much respect. Okay, let me see here. Let me get going here. So what I wanted to do is, how are we going to do this? Okay, so today's show, we really need to, and I want to take a look at, let me just fix this real quickly in the chat room. Let me get in there. Okay, so want to get into today's show. And anytime you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056. So there is something that I played for you all last week, and it was in around the – it was about how the military is no longer really ready for any type of military confrontation. So I want to really focus on that today just to give you an idea, because it's definitely, definitely happening. Now, what I want to do is I want you to hear something that the celebrity figurehead Secretary of the State had. Let me find it here. Had said earlier this week, okay? Very, very important. It's about a 10-minute video. I'm going to post it. Then we'll talk about it a little bit. Then I want you to hear something else. And then we're going to talk about, you know, really the U.S. military might is no longer. It really has is not even really significant in today's warfare. I mean, you have China that has a rail gun on naval vessels now, and a rail gun is significant. It doesn't matter what your overall defense is, how big your navy is just going to be nothing but a big target, and the significance of a rail gun. So those of you that understand the significance of a rail gun, the kinetic energy of a rail gun is just phenomenal. That was what Saddam Hussein was trying to build, and they didn't want him to get that rail gun. And so, you know, the U.S. has discontinued its rail gun project, but not China. They've actually already got it on naval vessels, an actual rail gun, a mini rail gun, which is very, very significant. Russia have a hypersonic weapon. The U.S. is now trying to hurry up and create hypersonic weapons. And like Vladimir Putin said, we're not developing it. We already have them. Other countries are just starting to try to get them. So what does that mean? By the time they get them, it'd be already too late. So, but I want you to hear this. This is from the secretary, the celebrity figurehead Secretary of State Pompeo, and tell you, man, they're making the decisions that are being made are going to really adversely affect us in major ways, and that is going to be in this war that the U.S. will lose. But I want you to hear this, and I posted it. Scotty, if you could just play this real quick. If you can't, don't worry about it. I'll play some of it. Okay, Scotty's there. So, but Scotty, if you got to do something, that's quite all right. Always appreciate your insight on this too, because there's the other one I want you to see too, Scotty, because I think is really, really important. So there was an announcement earlier this week that Pompeo made in regards to China and Russia and just the overall global tensions. And the whole setup for the purging of the U.S. is really, really at hand. We want you to be aware of it, make your own decisions as to the importance of it. But I would definitely say that it should be, you know, a high priority for you, because it is definitely going to affect and alter and change your life dramatically. So, Scott, if you would just
the United States today sanctioned an international network that the Iranian regime and Russia are using to provide millions of barrels of oil to the Assad regime. So it's a mean, nasty world out there. The Middle East in particular, there are important American interests to keep the American people safe. Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. I want to touch on five topics today. First, the United States today sanctioned an international network that the Iranian regime and Russia are using to provide millions of barrels of oil to the Assad regime. This is in exchange for the movement of hundreds of millions of dollars to the IRGC Quds Force. That money is then passed on to terrorist organizations like Hezbollah and Hamas. The United States, in its continued efforts, will not allow these dirty dealings to flourish. Iran will not be allowed to exploit the international financial system to hide revenue streams it uses to fund terrorist activity, support sectarian militias abusing civilian populations, or to destabilize the region. Second, you've seen that Interpol is electing a new president. It's an important organization. We strongly endorse Kim Jong-yang, who is serving as its acting president. We encourage all nations and organizations that are part of Interpol and that respect the rule of law to choose a leader with credibility and integrity that reflects one of the world's most critical law enforcement bodies. We believe Mr. Kim will be just that. Third, our special representative for Afghanistan Reconciliation, Zalmay Khalilzad, just got back from his trip to Afghanistan, the UAE, and Qatar. Ambassador Khalilzad's first and last stop was Kabul, where he met with President Ghani, Chief Executive Abdullah, and other Afghan stakeholders to facilitate a peace process between the government of Afghanistan and the Taliban. During his visit to Kabul, Ambassador Khalilzad met with men and women active in Afghan civil society and peace efforts, members of the media, and other governmental and non-governmental organizations. In every one of his meetings, Ambassador Khalilzad stressed that all Afghans must have a say in creating a sustainable peace for Afghanistan. We will continue to work with all interested parties to support and facilitate an inclusive peace process. Fourth, our special representative for North Korea, Steve Biegun, is meeting today with his Republic of Korea counterpart to further strengthen our close coordination on efforts to achieve our shared goal of the final fully verified denuclearization, as agreed to by Chairman Kim. These are important discussions today with the Republic of Korea. They are discussing ongoing diplomatic efforts, our sustained implementation of UN sanctions, and the inter-Korean cooperation. And finally, I just left the meeting with Turkish Foreign Minister Çavuşoğlu today. I welcome the positive momentum in our relationship following the release of Pastor Brunson and urged reopening additional channels to address issues of mutual concern. We are still greatly concerned about Turkey's continued unjust detention of U.S. locally employed staff and citizens, including NASA scientist Serkan Gülge. We also discussed the Khashoggi case and the need to work together to de-escalate conflict in Syria, support the reinvigoration of the UN-led peace process, and achieve a peaceful, lasting solution.
I was sure Buster would be a good guard dog.
I was sure I parked here.
I was
solution to the Syrian conflict. With that, I'm happy to take a few questions.
Secretary, one of the things that the President points to in his statement is a $110 billion arms initiative. But by the State Department's own record in October, only $14.5 billion has come through. When do you expect to see the rest of the money from that arms agreement?
Some of these contracts, the defense contracts in particular, are complex, lengthy contract negotiations. We are working diligently on the remainder of those. We actually hope that number will end up being even greater. I couldn't tell you when those negotiations will conclude, but we are very, very hopeful that each of those commitments that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia made to the United States to purchase equipment will be completed in a timely fashion.
Thank you so much. Mr. Secretary, based on the President's statement, moving forward, relations with Saudi Arabia won't be affected by the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, and how can you differentiate between the kingdom and the crown prince?
Yeah. So it's a mean, nasty world out there. The Middle East in particular, there are important American interests to keep the American people safe, to protect Americans, not only Americans who are here, but Americans who are traveling and working, doing business in the Middle East. It is the President's obligation, indeed the State Department's duty as well, to ensure that we adopt policies that further the America's national security. So as the President said today, the United States will continue to have a relationship with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They're important partner of ours. We will do that with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, its people. That is the commitment that the President made today. It's that straightforward. This is a long, historic commitment, and one that is absolutely vital.
Meet Wallabot DIY. This device shows you an exact image of what's behind your wall.
To America's national security, we are determined to ensure that we continue to make sure that we take care of the American people in all of the strategic decisions we make about with whom we work around the world.
Michelle with NPR. So one quick follow-up on that and then a question on Iran. So does the America First agenda mean putting U.S. business interests ahead of human rights concerns? And then on Iran, have you considered any specific actions, specific sanctions to pressure Iran to release the American citizens who are held there?
Hey, try taking your second question first.
Yep.
We are engaged every day, literally every day, in working to return every U.S. citizen who is either wrongfully detained or a hostage somewhere around the world. That certainly includes Bob Levinson and all those that are being held by the Iranian regime. We're determined to get them back. As President Trump has made very clear, we're not going to pay a price for their return, but we are prepared to work with all those who can assist us in getting those Americans returned to their families and returned here to our country. Your other question is best answered by talking about what we have already done. There has been an enormous effort with respect to fact-finding pertaining to the death, the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. A lot of U.S. resources have been devoted to determining the facts to the best of our ability to determine precisely what happened there. The United States took a very strong response. We have sanctioned 17 individuals in connection with that investigation. We are at the same time committed to making sure that we place America's national security interests and all the actions that take place in the context of doing the right thing to make sure that America continues to.
We got in out of office from Dave, so we CC'd Pam. She replied CC and Rav, but forgot about me.
Meet Wallabot DIY. This device shows you an exact image of what's behind your wall.
Thrive and grow. And when we do that, the world is better off for it too, and the Middle East is better off as well.
Ben from NHK.
Yeah, you mentioned Steve Biegun's meeting with his South Korean counterpart. I just wanted to ask, what's the message he's going to be sending as far as what the U.S. government would like to see South Korean government do as far as coordinating their inter-Korean efforts and the denuclearization efforts?
So I think there's complete agreement between the South Koreans and us with respect to how this should proceed. We now have a working group that formalizes those processes so that we can be sure that we don't talk past each other, that we don't take an action or the South Koreans don't take an action that the other is unaware of or hasn't had a chance to comment on or provide their thoughts. And that's the purpose of the working group that's being led on our side by Stephen Biegun. We have made clear to the Republic of Korea that we do want to make sure that that peace on the peninsula and the denuclearization of North Korea aren't lagging behind the increase in the amount of interrelationship between the two Koreas. We view them as tandem. As moving forward together, we view them as important parallel processes, and that working group is designed to make sure they continue to remain that way.
And a final question, CNN.
Hi, Secretary Pompeo, you mentioned you're gathering all these facts. Does the president's statement today mean that that fact-finding segment is over? And have you seen the assessment he is expected to get today?
I can't comment on intelligence matters. I direct you to the DNI, Director Coates, or to the CIA to talk about particular intelligence issues. Facts will obviously still continue to come to light. I'm confident of that. It's the way the world works.
And as these facts yeah. come to light, will you pursue further actions against whoever, even if it does
we have been
Hey, Jason here. I'm going to share one of the most powerful secrets in the business world, okay?
Ambiguous with respect to how we have treated the data set that we have been able to get. When America has the information it needs, it will, of course, do the right thing to protect American interests. And we have done so every time.
How can you trust the Saudis after so much disinformation?
That's not the question. The Prime Minister, Saad Hariri, said that they are
the government.
Okay, I wanted to play that for this reason. I said that the world is a nasty place, and what's basically happening is that all the stage is being set. Watch, what's really going to come out of this Khashoggi thing is that it was more than MBS that was involved in it. It was probably actually sanctioned in by the current administration. On people within the administration. This is why this is going to be a part of the whole dismantling, because Saudi Arabia is critical to the overall United States standing in the world. And that standing is because of the overall relationship. Some of the key relationships are keystone relationships, and having the dominance that the U.S. once had was that they used Saudi Arabia as leverage against the world because of energy. You control nations by energy. You control people by resources. If you don't allow resources to go to people and you control resources, you will dictate their overall decision-making and they will become subjugates of yours. With oil, that's what it is for countries. If you control oil, then you will control their overall projection and they will become subjugated to you. So one of the things that I think is very significant that the former NATO members are taking, and outside of NATO, that being China and Russia, Germany and France, what they did in Turkey, what they did was they nullified the U.S. because the U.S. is currently attacking them all. So now they say, okay, you want to play? We'll play ball. And they're playing an asymmetrical game that has already nullified the U.S. and is going to push them into the U.S. into a position to where they will be the aggressors, just as the Third Reich of Nazi Germany was during World War II. They got them right where they want them, because now they're not worried about the overall capabilities of the U.S. anymore. And this shows that the U.S. has unraveled completely geopolitically. Remember when Khashoggi was killed? Celebrity figurehead Trump said they botched it, they messed it up, meaning he already knew about it completely, and was complicit in it all. And all of that's going to come out. But as that starts to come out, the U.S. will make moves to counter that. And the moves that they're going to be using to counter that is going to be direct military confrontation. They're going to create a crisis. They're going to have an event that looks like one thing so that they can engage. They're going to actually, in my opinion, engage militarily Iran, Russia, inside of Syria. And it's going to probably happen in the province of Idlib, the Idlib province. And believe me, that is going to blow up, and then it will move into the Ukraine, and then it will move further into the Middle East. And let me tell you, Saudi Arabia actually is only able to defend itself because of the Naval Fifth Fleet. If the Naval Fifth Fleet wasn't there, Saudi Arabia would not be able to defend itself. And Saudi Arabia is critical in this whole thing. So there is an asymmetrical war and a war of psyops that's going on. And the contradiction, see, the bad part about it is that they've already got all the evidence of who, where the overall the overall involvement in Khashoggi. See, Khashoggi is not a small incident at all. It's an incident that is actually going to gain all kinds of legs. Countries are going to start to ban Saudi Arabia militarily and all that were involved in it. That means they're going to break ties. How do you break the U.S. sanctions? Easy. You show them as a global evil. And in showing them as a global evil that is engaged in crimes against humanity, that now breaks any stronghold that they had. They got them and caught them red-handed. And it was convenient for them to do that because, in my opinion, the system wanted that to happen, to have this overall war. And that war is going to be very, very critical. So we want to take a look at that. And if you heard a lot of what the celebrity figurehead Secretary of State was saying, basically they're trying to go back on the offensive now. And that offensive is going to lead to direct military confrontation with and is going to on multiple theaters in multiple regions of the world, the Middle East, the continent of Africa, the Eurasian countries, Asia, South America and Central America, and in North America. Because in this overall war engagement, there will actually be, for the first time, military strikes in the continental United States. And that is very, very significant. Most people here aren't ready for anything like that. And in D.C. right now, they're preparing for war. In my opinion, they're preparing to lose war, because the U.S. will lose the war because of how big it is. You think about it. It has the U.S. EUCOM, the U.S. CENTCOM. The U.S. EUCOM is the military control com of Europe. You have the U.S. CENTCOM. That's the Middle East, including Egypt in the United. I mean, in on the continent of Africa. The U.S. AFCOM, that is the whole continent of Africa. You have the U.S. PACCOM, and the U.S. PACCOM is the Asian Pacific. Then you have the U.S. SOUTHCOM, which is all of South America and parts of Central America. Well, Central America and South America. Then you have U.S. NORTHCOM, which is the North. The United States, Mexico, and Canada, and Alaska. So the U.S. has divided the planet into different U.S. comms. And these U.S. comms are military installations. And they've overextended themselves because, wait, how many is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 U.S. comms. And they encompass the whole world. And they have over 800 military bases around the world. In the past, that was a measure of strength. In today's world, is a measure of weakness. And because of that, they talked about the budget, right? And you heard him say that the budget was one thing. They hadn't got the rest of it. They're going to hopefully get more of the military budget. Because that overall budget is, it doesn't matter how much they've gotten, it's insufficient because it's been squandered and stolen and divided in so many things and black op projects and everything else where it's unsustainable. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much cash the U.S. throws at this overall problem. Cash is not something that can fix it, because cash is not money. And the overall U.S. dollar has actual challenges, has competition now. So it doesn't have the overall impact in the world that it had before. They can't bribe with U.S. dollars anymore. The criminals won't take it. They don't want, and they won't take it because they don't want it. And all of this is unraveling. And it's going to unravel to where, in a point where the U.S. will actually make a move of aggression in a wartime scenario, in an economic scenario, where they're going to try to starve people out of their position to get them to obey and intimidate them and to heavy-handedly force them into obeying. And it's not working, because countries are using their own currency in bilateral trades. They're getting goods. They don't need the overall U.S., nor do they need to be threatened or bullied by them anymore. Because the only thing that what the U.S. was able to do, they can't even do now. The situation is so bad, they're focusing on all of the major nations, and then all of the other nations that they had under control from that, they've lost the grips with those, because those nations have now made deals with the U.S. adversaries. And it's all piling up and coming to a full violent head. The U.S. can't win wars of aggression anymore. The thing is that they can't intimidate into surrenderance anymore. They are going to be extremely aggressive and lose. And so it's pretty darn significant. And want to just take a look at just how that is starting to happen and what that may entail of. So why is that important? It's real, very, very important for you all, because it's going to directly affect you, your family, your quality of life, your standard of living, and it's going to also affect your overall family the young people of today are going to have a very, very steep challenge that no U.S. generation has ever faced. Not the generation of World War I, not the generation of World War II, not the generation of the so-called Great Depression. When you look at the generation of the Great Depression, that is going to seem like someone dropped their lunch money compared to what's going to be happening here. And the reason being is because at that time, the U.S. was not the reserve currency status of the world. It was not the overall, didn't have the reserve currency status of the world. It didn't have the petrodollar status of the world. It didn't have the overall the need to continue to feed and to consume and take the whole world as consumption. The diet that the world is going to put the U.S. under is going to cause for the malnutrition of the U.S., and it will dissolve in such a fashion. Apathy will definitely happen to the U.S. And there is going, and that is going to have a very, very painful a very, very painful unraveling. The untying of the U.S. is going to be extremely significant. So, how is that going to? Why is that so significant, and how is that going to work? In my opinion, as you look at in the celebrity figurehead Trump and Pence going over to the ASEAN meeting, basically trying to get the Asian Pacific nations, the southern eastern Asian nations, to move away from China, and basically move away from the BRIC nations, China and Russia. They all are encompassing together, trying to get them to move away from them. And they were able to garnish some support. But what does that really mean? That means a complete defeat by the U.S. because they were able to garnish some support. The U.S. was able to always garnish all support in the past. And the some support that they were able to get was less, they got less than half of the support of the nations that were there. But they still got some support. But that basically says is that they are completely done. Because they no longer have the influence. And the nations that did give the support, believe me, it was temporary and it was only from an act of convenience. When celebrity figurehead Pence, Vice President Pence, was at the ASEAN nation meetings, the Association of Southeastern Asian Nation Conference in Singapore, they made a bid to nullify Russia and talk about how nullify China, talk about how China is the adversary that they all need to stand up against. And then the U.S. made their overall, they gave the countries basically an ultimatum. Why did they only get less than half of the support? Because one, their geopolitical situation is not what it used to be. Two, their currency is nothing. What you're going to bribe them with? Where do you have? What would make the overall countries, what was in their best interest to go with you as they've done in the past? So that calls for a major, major shift. And the U.S. is not savvy enough to understand that it's in a losing position, and the best thing to do is to contract itself and then reinvent itself later on. It won't have the discipline to do that. Russia did it in order to defeat the U.S., and that plan worked. And it's now going to show the benefits of its heart. And I think the overall, what they calculated that they would gain is going to be far less than what they thought, because it's working at such a masterful unfolding, because the participant was far, far sicker and far worse than what they really thought. And it's unfolding. And what I mean by that is this, is that Russia took a strategical approach to the U.S. to dissolve it, to defeat it. It didn't take the straight-on, hard-line approach to defeating it. It took an asymmetrical approach. I didn't see Roz in queue, so let me chill for a minute, go to my man Roz. Roz, I'm sorry I didn't see you in queue. I just had a feeling. I said, oh, let me check the queue. And so Roz wanted to chime in. Roz, welcome to Tando Radio Show. What say you, bro?
Hey, peace and love to you, Brother Dave. How's everything?
Everything is good, Roz. Everything is good. You know, when you come in, man, I'll be on my little rant. Just say, hey, Dave, I'm here.
Oh, it's all good. I was just going to let you finish your you know, what you were saying, because it's been a quite powerful program today, as all of the ones, especially most recently, has been, like you said, things are accelerating quite quickly. So stuff is just happening at a pace where, man, it's like anything could jump off any moment of any day.
Any moment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and peace to Scotty, too. Yeah, I hope he's well as well. I wanted to touch base because I sent you an article a couple days ago, but this is something you talked about, man, a very long time ago with the whole North Korea situation. And I just wanted to read a brief section of the article.
Do it.
It's from Freedom Outpost, and the title is Surprise, North Korea Will Not Denuclearize. North Korea's announcement that Kim will not be denuclearizing has been met with heightened fears of a third world war. At this time, it is most likely to be a global nuclear conflict. According to the Daily STA UK, sources inside the communist state have reportedly revealed that its leader, Kim Jong-un, has no plans to surrender his nuclear weapons, despite talks of denuclearization with Trump. And this is from the Asia Press International. Jiro Isha Maru is the journalist. Mm-hmm. But they say he revealed that insiders have said Kim has been assuring his citizens he won't allow North Korea to be vulnerable. Quote, even after Kim met with U.S. President Donald Trump, progress on a peace treaty has been slow, unquote, said Jiro. Quote, so Kim must feel the need to assure the people domestically that he has no intention of letting go of nuclear weapons, unquote. Talks between the U.S. and North Korea have not gone as smoothly as expected since Trump and Kim had their historic and landmark meeting in Singapore in July. Although the two leaders have agreed to a second summit in the U.S., early next year, the schedule and agenda have been yet to be set in stone. A high-level meeting to iron out details that was scheduled to have taken place on November 8th was canceled the day before without explanation. But it's a safe bet that the U.S. will be adding North Korea's nukes to the discussion. So everything you said about them, you know, going forward to give the impression that they would denuclearize to de-escalate the situation, but come back around later, and, you know, North Korea is doing the smart thing. You know, why is it that the U.S. should be the only country on the planet to have such an extensive, unnecessary nuclear arsenal? Because that sets up other countries, like you said. A country with nuclear weapons can do whatever they want to another country because they have the threat of annihilating that country. So it would be a complete simpleton to not do that. And recently, I was seeing information that Ethiopia has been working with Russia to get nuclear reactors and stuff set up in their country. I'm hoping they're smart enough to do something with a nuclear program and at least be the first African continental country to have nuclear weapons, because it might be able to protect not just themselves, but other African countries from U.S. aggression. So, I mean,
South Africa has them. South Africa has them. It is not admitted, but yes, South Africa has them. But go ahead, Raj, because it's so important.
No problem. Because I'm saying, if we can get leaders into the positions of power in these African countries, especially like a country like South Africa that has nukes, Ethiopia that's working towards developing a nuclear program,
unadmitted
directly. Unadmitted, I should say, yes. Thank you for that correction. So, I mean, if we can do that, that'll be a great way of setting up a position of more control over that entire continental region, the more countries go in that direction. And that's really what they're trying to stop. But I just thought it was quite significant that article came out. I know I sent it to you. I'm pretty sure I did. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you got to check it out. Yeah. But I just thought it was super important.
I actually read it one day. You weren't here.
Okay. Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. I probably could. I haven't gotten to catch up on the old programs yet that I missed. So I will do that. But yeah, I just thought it was extremely significant because I haven't seen it plastered all over the place yet. But I have a feeling that, like you said, it's going to end up being one of those linchpin situations that'll set off major chain reactions down the road. So with that, I'll mute myself. But I just wanted to just add that to the mix and kind of get your take on it or your deeper insight on that, as well as the African continent and its ability to move forward in a more protected state against these colonialist powers by utilizing a similar strategy to what North Korea did. And thanks again. And with that, I'll mute myself.
For sure. We'll definitely cover that because the continent really has some future challenges with China because the U.S. is not really significant anymore, but we're definitely going to cover it. So listen, everyone, gotta get ready to go to a commercial break. What we'll do is I'm gonna play something else. I want you to hear the overall state of the U.S. military. Then we're going to talk about how this thing goes war wise with cyber, because some things I'm gonna read you some things from there, and then talk directly to Raj about what he asked. So you're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break. Scotty, give me 2 minutes. We'll be right back.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from L.A. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. I'm going to be off of the board, so if you call in, just say, excuse me, I'll stop and go to you. But and a couple of things that we're going to cover in this hour, talk a little bit, because Roz asked a very, very important question, a very strategical question that is so true, and we're going to take a look at why the U.S. Military will actually lose and replace something for you, then talk about some cyber stuff that is a part of the overall loss and what that entails. So, you know, Roz asked a very – I want to take Roz first. Roz had asked, you know, about the continent. What can they do in learning from some of these asymmetrical ways to eject colonizers? Well, one of the things is that Africa is presently under the overall change. Right now, China and Russia are going to be the – China in particular, because of its population, is going to be the next empire that will have the overall – what the system always wants to have, the beacon of freedom mantra. So that's going to move to China. It's already been moving to China so long, and within the next couple of years, we'll actually see that transfer in its fullness, and then you'll see the untied states of America happen. The United States is no longer relevant. It is a has-been lost empire, will be historically written about as a lost empire. The new empire and the new beacon of freedom that will come out is going to come out of the East, the Far East, and it's going to be China. And I think that overall stay will happen for maybe two centuries. And then the next empire that will come out of there, that empire will come out of somewhere out of the continent of Africa. And during this overall empire change from the U.S. to China and Russia, and then I definitely think that they'll go to war. Russia and China will go to war years down the line because of splitting out the resources and splitting out the overall what was actually taken into receivership from the United States that will cause a skirmish with them. And then that'll be settled out. But during that whole time, there is going to be a massive, massive building and development program that's going to happen within the continent. As soon as the empire of the U.S. is completely disassembled, or even before that disassembling takes place, during the overall war, there will be a migration of investment that will go to the continent, and it will go to various countries within the continent. Some countries will do much better than others, but the overall there will be a progressive swing, as that will become the emerging economy will come out of Africa. The arrived economy will be out of the emerging ones now, India, China, and nations such as that. They will have a position of predominance for about 200 years. And 200 years is just a real 200, 300 years. 200, 300 years is really, in the overall scope and scheme, is only like 10 or 30 or 20 years. Okay, that may that one, we generationally we won't see that. Everyone now won't see that. What we're going to see is the overall fall of the empire. We won't see the resurgence of the other empires in fullness. You won't see the overall the beacon of freedom moving to China in its fullness. You'll never see that because it's going to happen over a time period. But you'll see the beginning stages of it. Very important for all of you that's listening to Tando Radio show now, you should keep some form of journal, preferably a book-written journal about this, because it will actually be critical information of the overall empire that fell, known as one of the greatest fallen empire. And as they talk about the fallen empires, they will talk about the United States of America as being the largest one. But in that overall, now, speaking now, as that overall disassemblement happens, there's going to be a massive amount of investment and development that's going to start to happen on the continent in Africa. And they will start to develop their overall trends and their policies and their procedures, and they will start to establish their overall economic standing and geopolitical status. Some nations will do more than others. Some will do, but it will. They will all grow exponentially there. And then, so after the overall age of China, now when China loses its position, China will not be dissolved like the U.S. was dissolved. China's the nation is just too ancient. What they'll do is they'll just move that overall predominant position of governance will be taken from them, and it will move to Africa. Where in Africa? I have an idea, but I'm not too certain, because that's 250 years from now. But it looks like it will be in the resource heavy area that will happen. Just look at where the resource heavy areas are. I know that Libya, Nigeria will be very significant. South Africa will be very significant. Countries. Ghana will be a very significant country because of the resources that are there. Uganda will be significant. So, to answer Ra's question, I think that they're gaining that overall perspective now. Right now, that there's a massive push by China to get into that area, because they're going to need to establish the overall beacon of freedom by using the resources of Africa to do it. So very, very significant. That's just my opinion and what I see. So hopefully, Roz, that gave, you know, that was an answer to, that's just what I see. Because one thing about this overall empire, the system, is that the system is cyclical. In order for it to stay in this position of control, so it's not looked at as the problem itself that needs the solution, it has to have nations rise and nations fall. It has to have divisions among the overall masses of people, and everybody get a turn at it. Everyone gets a turn at being a very, very evil nation, and everybody gets a turn at being a very prosperous nation and an exploited nation. This is how they work. Then that way, by having that, then people will always look at the dividing of the lines. They will always look at the border and not look at the people. So that's just my overall take of it all, just the way I'm seeing this thing fall out, unfold. So, and now what I want to do is I want to talk about this whole thing with, need to really play this for you. I'm going to play this for you. I'll put it in. And I played part of it, and this is why the U.S. military is woefully unprepared for a major conventional conflict. And I would say that they're just woefully unprepared. No, the military is woefully prepared to do what it's going to do. It's being set up to lose. But how and why? And how can you see that happening? I want you to listen to this. We listened to a part of it. I'm going to pick it up from the just short of the 7 minute mark. Listen to 7 minutes of it and take it to the 14 minute mark. Listen and pay attention. We're going to play this all the way through, continue, not now, but in parts. But you need to really hear. So check this out. I'm going to play this. Hold on 1 second. Here we go.
More than any other nation by far. As the U.S. has reduced its active footprint in both Afghanistan and Iraq, it has sold many of these vehicles to local security forces, and even U.S. domestic police forces, as they are of little use on a contested battlefield where the U.S. military would be fighting a conventional conflict with a powerful adversary. The U.S. military experience with occupation and counterinsurgency also resulted in an over-focusing of resources towards a traditionally elite, limited, and specialized subset of conventional fighting forces. Special operations. All effective modern national defense forces operate a small cadre of special operations units. These units are comprised of highly motivated, highly trained, and highly skilled soldiers who can perform any number of military tasks, but are specifically focused on asymmetrical, hybrid, and very specialized warfare subsets. Prior to the U.S. wars of occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, the United States operated a robust special operations force comprising of units from all services. The considerable investments in these highly selective forces, the high standards demanded, and the extremely difficult training requirements have always kept these forces small. However, this has changed a great deal over the past 17 years. The need for soldiers with a skill set specific to counterinsurgency in Iraq and Afghanistan led to increased focus and demand on special operations. From 2001 to the present, the Special Operations Forces under the Special Operations Command, or SOCOM, have expanded from 42,800 to approximately 63,500 today. Special Operations specific funding has grown fourfold in the same time period, from $3.1 billion to $12.3 billion. According to SOCOM, an average of 8,300 special operators are deployed in missions in as many as 149 nations across the globe on a weekly basis, and 70 nations on any given day. This overemphasis on special operation.
Okay, let me stop it there real quick. Let me just stop it real quick. Oh no, I messed up. Okay, I wanted to stop it there real quick, and here's why I wanted to stop it there real quick. Very significant. You heard how many units in how many nations, and these are small units. Here's the problem with that. See, you can sustain that for a short period of time when you have no real military threat. When you're fighting a country that you really that has no real capability of defending itself or is really no challenge to your military, then you can fragment your military that way. Think about that for a minute. When you go to a war with China, you may have a small unit or specialized unit of individuals in 70 countries, but they have enough people to put throughout the whole darn universe. While you have 70 countries, they could have it in 700 or 1,700 countries. Their overall small unit engagement would outweigh yours by tenfold, 20-fold. And just on logistically, you can't win. You absolutely can't win. And that's very, very important. And so that is good for a country that can't defend itself against your military in any form and fashion, so that then you can do those little insurgents with small specialized units. And the U.S. military has moved itself to a specialized unit platform. Because it did that because it had to engage itself into a warfare with nations that they could easily beat militarily, but having to control them, they needed to have it broken down in smaller units. Hence, what am I saying? That type of mentality and that move to that type of warfare completely ensured that the U.S. would not be able to be combat ready against a major, major adversary that can defend itself. It can't fight China and Russia now. It's woefully inept to meet that challenge. And in order to get into that position, they need to be in a different position economically. They need to be in a different position geopolitically. They need to be in a different position logistically. So, see, you can do all that type of high-tech warfare stuff against a country that won't be able to defend. You can't do it against a country that can't. They tried to kill Maduro in Venezuela by using a drone. They were able to blow up that drone 100 yards away. They let the drone get there, and they chose to blow it up where they blew it up. What was that telling them? They nullifying their what they consider their technology is actually their hindrance. Remember that Iran brought down the overall the U.S. drone years ago and flew it and landed it with all of this intel and everything else? It's a big difference. So let me get back to with this. So I wanted you to hear that. Here it is. Here we go. So they have over 149 nations have special ops of 8,300. Do you know how many special op units China can make just by themselves without any other allies? Can't be one. So here we go.
...17 nations on any given day. This overemphasis on special operations has resulted in atrophying of more conventional combat forces. Secretary Mattis has obviously recognized the need to focus higher procurement towards conventional forces, as well as fund R&D efforts into developing a new field artillery, rocket artillery, armored fighting vehicles such as the AMPV, and a new main battle tank, MBT. In identifying near-peer adversaries as the greatest national security threat, Secretary Mattis realizes that the U.S. must waste no time in closing the technological and quality gap that now exists between the conventional fighting forces of the United States.
Okay, let me stop there. The gap. What's the gap? When they say a technology gap, the technology is not the technology that people think that you need instead of I don't know what iPhone they have out. Maybe it's what, iPhone 9 or 8 or something like that. Instead of having an iPhone 9, having an iPhone 15. No. What win is an iPhone 1. And that's a technology upgrade. See, what Russia and China has is they have military equipment that is more simplistic and immune to technology, so, sort of like your car having a Faraday cage around it for an EMP, that is more simplistic and it works. The U.S. has always gone to highly technical. It's the latest G-55, G-25, but the thing about that stuff is so fragile, and it doesn't work in all climates. It only works in theory because it has all the lights, bells, and whistles. This is why nations are moving away from buying arms from the U.S., and the preferred country to buy arms from is the simplistic stuff that works out of Russia. That's huge. And then not only that, the U.S. military has been infiltrated by the Chinese, by the Russians, by the Koreans, by North Korea. By what? Through their hardware. The bases of their hardware has been infiltrated by these countries. This is how they're able to steer a ship into the two battleships. So, Israel, here we go. Let me finish this out.
And Russia and China, respectively. The United States surely has the economic resources and the technical capability to do so. While the ground forces of the United States have suffered from two decades of occupation and counterinsurgency, the U.S. Navy seems to have lost any idea of its national security role. After two decades of enjoying uncontested control of the seas and the ability to use aircraft carrier-borne airstrikes to pummel inferior adversaries, none of which possessed a viable navy or air force, nor a modern air defense network or shore-based anti-naval capability, the U.S. Navy has seemed determined to sail further into the realm of irrelevancy in any further conflict. The United States Navy has not engaged in any major naval engagement with a major adversary in since the closing days of World War II. Regardless, the U.S. Navy apparently has decided it is an indomitable force that can go wherever it pleases without opposition. Such hubris and arrogance are one of the reasons why it is in such poor shape today. The other reason must surely be attributed to a military-industrial complex that has sold the service on an expensive pipe dream of high-tech weapons that failed to live up to their hype, all to the tune of huge profits. The following are the most egregious examples. Based on a flawed concept from the start, a radical departure from a traditional multi-purpose design, the littoral combat ship was largely doomed for a number of reasons. Two different designs rewarded contracts: the Independent class, designed by General Dynamics, and the Freedom class, designed by Lockheed Martin. The decision to produce two different designs to meet the needs of a single class should have been seen as problematic. Here, the Navy accepted the responsibility and costs associated with maintaining two different platforms with separate maintenance needs and schedules, not to mention two separate training programs for LCS crews. The concept of the LCS was also divergent in many respects, and quite frankly, too much was expected of a ship that was smaller in size than the conventional frigates. What resulted was what those serving in the force would begrudgingly coin the little crappy ship. The aluminium and composite, Independence class, and lightweight steel or Freedom class hulls of the ship provide little armored protection. Defensive striking power is totally inadequate, the platform has yet to meet many of its design requirements, and the reduced crew size has been determined to be unmanageable. As a result of its overwhelming failure to meet the expectations of the U.S. Navy or congressional oversight, total fleet size of LCS vessels has been reduced from the original 50 planned down to 32. Project cost overruns, a number of high-profile system failures, and the smaller fleet size have resulted in a total cost of $12.4 billion for the first 26 vessels. The U.S. Congress capped the per-unit cost at $480 million per ship, bringing a theoretical total cost to $15.5 billion, all for a ship that has a minimal chance of surviving most modern naval combat scenarios. There's little wonder why the U.S. Navy has decided to start building a multi-purpose frigate, dubbed the FFG-X, to pick up where the LCS has failed. If the LCS was not a huge and unequivocal disappointment, then the much-vaulted stealth-destroyer, the DDG-1000 Sumbawa class, was a total embarrassment and unmitigated failure. Envisioned as a high-tech game-changer, the DDG-1000 was supposed to make use of powerful new technologies, overwhelming firepower, and massive power generation, all wrapped in stealth, that would render it invisible. Although designed as a multi-mission surface combatant, added emphasis was put on Naval Surface Fire Support, NSFS, operating in littoral waters. Originally, the Navy intended to build 32 of these stealth destroyers, yet the exorbitant initial cost plus huge cost overruns led the Navy and the U.S. Congress to reduce the fleet repeatedly, finally settling on only three vessels. Correspondingly, the cost per vessel increased tremendously, as did the cost of all class-specific systems, including weapon systems, power generation, and propulsion systems. Cost per vessel stands at over $7.5 billion. The Mark 51 Advanced Gun System, AGS, deck guns designed specifically for the DDG-1000s were made to fire guided rounds over a range in excess of 80 nautical miles with extreme accuracy. These guns were designed to strike shore targets accurately from coastal waters in support of Allied ground forces and amphibious landing forces. Lockheed Martin and BAE Systems developed the long-range land attack projectile for use in the AGS, but due to the now three-vessel fleet, the per-unit cost of each LR-LAP has risen to over $800,000. The first two vessels in class have both experienced main engine failures and damages. The U.S. Michael Monsoor DDG-1001 suffered damage to the turbine blades of one of its main engines during sea trials in February of this year. The MT-30 engine will have to be replaced at a cost of $20 million. The USSS Sumbawa DDG-1000 famously broke down during its transit from Maine to San Diego and had to be towed from the Panama Canal to its new home port. The U.S. Navy is now struggling to find a new role for the DDG-1000s. Now that its fire support mission is a non-starter, it has been adapted as a platform to strike inland targets with land attack cruise missiles and engage other surface ships with an anti-ship cruise missile that has yet to be fielded. In an attempt to utilize the USSS Tsumbawa, the Navy has added legacy weapon systems, radars, and communications antennas to the stealthy superstructure, undoubtedly negating its minimal radar signature. It remains to be seen what munitions will be provided for the two AGS turrets, as no munitions other than the cost-prohibitive LR-LAP exist. As if the U.S. Navy was not content with wasting $38 billion on the failed LCS and DDG G1000 programs, an even more grandiose undertaking was envisioned for the service that would revolutionize a largely obsolete supercarrier. It is widely accepted fact that the U.S. Navy has been obsessed with the aircraft carrier since a war.
Okay, so I wanted to stop it there. So some of the things that I wanted to show, you can see the complete, and I would say, in my opinion, this is all intentional. The overall ships look nice, but they're not practical at all. Not only aren't they practical, they don't work, and they can't do nearly half of the things that they were built to do. And they cut the overall, the expense of them went up, and then the overall, because of how expensive it was, the numbers of them had to go down, which meant the cost per ship was going up. Here's something that's very significant about that, is that they said in the beginning that the U.S. had the overall economic wherewithal to build what was necessary today, but they haven't, because through their arrogance and hubris, they've lost the initiative, and that's why they think in a way that's caused the demise. I think it's much deeper than that. One, the U.S. does not have the economic wherewithal to be able to afford what's necessary. And the reason being is because they've overextended themselves through arrogance and being a conquering nation. You can't build effectively when you've expanded through corruption and felonious measures. Meaning this, they have too much space to cover in order to put out material that works. It's just like your household. If you have, best way to put it, if you have many mouths to feed, and in feeding those, all of those individuals, let's say you have a family that you need to feed of 400 people, but you only have $1,000 or $4,000. The quality of the food that those people are going to get is going to be diminished because of how big and what the overall needs that the babies and the family members will have individually. Some of the family members are going to be sick. Some of them are going to require special shoes. Some are going to require this. Some of them are going to require that. Some won't require as much. Some will require this and that. And the overall, you can see what I mean by that. And that's what the U.S. has done in its expansion. The overall requirements to sustain that expansion is unsustainable. All at the same time that the overall currency of the U.S. is losing its purchasing power. So now how that correlates for you, that overall $4,000 that you have, now $4,000 is only able to buy in purchasing power $400. You are woefully inept. Somebody's going to starve. Someone is not going to get what they need. And this is the – one sec, Rise. I'm going to go to you in a second. And I'm glad you chimed in. And this is what's not really being explained. This is why their ships are crap. This is why their ships can't defend themselves against a much smaller, more frugal, more practical adversary. See, the U.S. always talks how many ships it has. Yeah, but they don't work. It's just a paper tiger. So, wanted to go to Roz. Roz, what say you?
Hey, Peace. Thanks for allowing me to speak again. What you say makes perfect sense to me. It does seem purposeful, and it's basically a self-fulfilling prophecy of wasting money. Because they make so much money hand over fist by building all of these different things, and they're spending all of this money on this technology, then what do they have to do when it fails? Spend more money. So it's basically an engine that perpetuates itself through just the propagation of wasting gluttony. Money. And then what they start to realize is all of this technology, like you said, is garbage, and we have to go back to the stuff that we ran away from.
But you can see the same thing in the way that our society works in America. They come out with all this new technology. They never vet it for shortcomings, the ability for it to be tampered with by hackers, the adverse effects that it could have if it's tampered with by hackers, all this type of stuff.
Or the adverse effect it has on your body.
On humans, exactly. And then they have to double back. I'll give you a good example. When I was working at Comcast, and I worked there for about 6 years, and I remember when the transition took place from using the antenna to everybody being forced to get cable. And you either had to get a cable box and get the full cable service, or you would get something called the Digital Transport Adapter, or DTA, which would allow you access to basic channels. And I remember we went to this big meeting, and they you know, discussed the fact that we were forced to transition by the federal government, and that the old system, as far as using radio waves like they used to, and you'd have your antenna, that system is still there, but it's going to be used basically by military, government, clandestine operations, and if the modern system, so-called updated system, collapses, they'll be able to go back to that old model. So they're telling you, at least with what they did with Comcast, they're telling you this new stuff is really, really not that great. It might add some convenience, it might add speed, things like that. But we're going to keep this old system that the public no longer has access to. They're not allowed to broadcast over air, you know, over the air anymore. That particular form of communication basically has been commandeered by the federal government. So. And again, like I said, it just costs more and more spending for more and more faulty stuff. They're not really thinking this stuff through, and it's purposeful because it allows them to waste more money, which generates their need to print more money, which generates the need to spend more money, whether it's by the public or by the government itself. So I think everything you laid out is completely correct and accurate, and it just makes sense to just stick with the things that work that are non-tamperable. You know, take computers out of cars if people are hacking cars and creating problems. You know, take artificial intelligence out of nuclear power plants if people can do a Stuxnet on it. Like, it's just common sense behavior as far as protecting yourself, but they don't care about protecting the public. They want us to suffer because that way they can control by telling us, hey, the government has a solution, the Hegelian dialectic all over again. We have the solution, and then the public's going to be suffering so bad that whatever the government throws at them, they'll take it. Even if it's saying, you know, in the hindsight, you're signing off all of your personal privacy rights, people won't care because they'll be suffering so much, they'll take anything the government throws at them. And it'll just be, you know, further down the rabbit hole as you continue to experience these sorts of traumas and conflict and solution narratives. With that, I'm...
Hold on, Roz. We got to get ready to go to a commercial break. We're going to come to a commercial break, come back. Jenna, I'm going to go to you right after. You're listening to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Hey, Dave.
Okay, welcome back. Yeah, go ahead, Scotty.
Hey, real quick, man. I just wanted to correct some stuff, at least to the best of my knowledge. If Ross is still there, Ross, the difference between digital and UHF is just a matter of the transponder and the receiver. It's still brought when they announced that the how should I put this? Like your not your cable stations, but your traditional terrestrial television stations, all they did was change out the transponders. They're still broadcasting through the airwave. It's just it's being transmitted digitally instead of analog. So it's still working off of antennas and things of that nature. So, I mean, because before we got cable here, we were just using, you know, the digital rabbit ears. All it is the difference is the transponder and the receiver. And you still, you know, can broadcast when you say, you know, the public. Yeah, they still have public access channels that people can go locally and have these little TV shows and stuff like that. They don't have them in my area. They have them in Charlotte, but you got to have a Charlotte, you know, you got to be within that zip code to get access to those stations. And, you know, if we all of a sudden lost access to television or cable or what, I wouldn't necessarily view it as a bad thing, you know. But, you know, we do need to get information, even though the information we get, you know, we have to consider the sources and how they might be lying to us or trying to manipulate us and what have you. But I wouldn't necessarily view that as a bad thing, as long as we still had the internet, you know, to go and get information that we need.
But you say, I wouldn't view that as a bad thing. Yeah, I agree. And you know what, Scotty, what you were saying is a lot of what Roz was saying too. You just know how it worked. How they went from the transmitters from changing from analog to digital. Yeah, that's absolutely right. They still use the antennas and everything else, but yeah, that was very important. But Roz, go ahead.
Oh yeah, brother Scotty, thanks for that correction, because I know where I live, over the antennas we get two local channels and that's it. So it's not that they're not broadcasting. What it was that they started using fiber optic. So with the fiber optic cables, they would use light and underground cables to transmit these digital signals, exactly like you were saying, rather than over the raw air. But they're still broadcasting over the air. It's just that we don't necessarily have access to it.
No, they're actually, I'm sorry, Ross, they're actually broadcasting digital over the air. When the government first announced that rollout, everybody was encouraged to get those new digital boxes. Still got rabbit ears, but they, you know, still connect to the back of the TV. But a digital can be broadcast over the airwaves as well.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And thanks for that, too, because I remember just making music when we had the transition from analog and then from what they called digalog, which was digital analog, and then straight to digital, which is what we deal with today. So you are absolutely correct, and I just wanted to say thanks for chiming in with that further insight on that, because I know that you have personal, you know, knowledge on the system.
Yeah, and I worked with this technology a while. Like the mixer I'm using right now to broadcast Tando radio show on our digital radio station is actually an analog mixer, but it has a digital converter on it that I then plug into the computer.
So, thanks for that. Because I think all of that insight is good for people to understand. And I think it is also just kind of bolsters what Dave was saying in regards to just spending massive amounts of money on this technology that really ends up being serving no purpose, because the adversarial attack from the quote-unquote enemy will neutralize all of that, and they will have to go back to what they now consider Stone Age devices anyway, which is stuff without all these major computers and things like that, which is what's making Russia now the more profitable military entity to get products from, versus all of this super hyper advanced stuff that really ends up being paperweights, symbolic paperweights, militarily speaking. Thanks so much, both of you. I'll mute myself now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's so funny because right now people think that we are in a time of peace. No, we've been in a war for a very, very long time, and all of the means of this war, it's not being declared. The war is being fought on a conspiracy with a conspiracy agenda under covert means, and these covert means aren't the traditional ways that they have us to look for a problem or a peril. What they make you think that you're in a state of tranquility when you're actually in the overall den of peril, so that you will not develop any true defenses against what it is happening. And the military is a good example of that and what we talked about. But we got another caller in queue. Want to go to my man Jenna. Jenna, what say you?
Greetings. How are you doing today, Dave?
What's going on, my brother? How are you?
I'm still learning. It's like it gets
I love when Jenna
longer.
Says that, man. I love when Jenna says that. It just has a certain resonating frequency. Go ahead, Jenna.
I just had a quick question. You was talking about you was talking about the history and how it won't happen to China because of the history and the legacy that they have. Now, as we go through, we know that China hasn't been fully invaded. Would that be the same? Because we know that there was a history here prior to the colonization and what have you. And from their records, more times when they conquer somewhere, they burn books and all of the historical significance of that particular place. Do you think this is just a shedding of that colonization, and then some of these old texts that probably haven't been deciphered or maybe have start to pop up to show some of the true resonance of that empire prior to the colonization? And I just wanted to ask that question. I put myself back on mute. Thank you.
Yeah, great question, Jen. I'll just say this. China and Russia have had an extensive attempt to scrub their history and to scrub it from some true nature. And so, you know, one of the things that's dangerous about the mainstream media is that it was the printing press that became one of the most useful tools. Because the printing press is how you can establish propaganda to nullify the true history. Winston Churchill said, history will be kind to England because England will write it. And this is how you're able to scrub the truth out. And so could that definitely has. Has it happened? Yes. Will it continue to happen? It's just too effective for it not to happen. So yes. And if you look at, Pastor Keith and I were looking at some stuff, when you look at history, one of the things that happens is that when colonizers come in, one of the first things that they want to do is they want to scrub that overall history of where they colonized by injecting themselves and scrubbing out the original inhabitants. Because then that does what? That shows the overall criminal and illegal taking. So that they can't sovereign claim to it. Sovereign claim is very important. So yeah, great question, Jenny. Yes, I definitely see that being a part of, because it's happened so deeply. You know, just look at gentrification. That's really what you have. That process works so well, and it's a momentum process. You start to scrub out the overall truth. And you have to do that. And the printing press, and when I say the printing press, I mean the overall, this is why for the system, the airways are sacred to them, because it's the seat of their power. It's really the seat of their power. So, man, great, great question. Yeah, I definitely see that too, Jenna, in the future. So what how that shapes out is going to be... And as we move on, I think ancestrally our overall connection, our frequencies have to become stronger. This is why there's a push to suppress people's DNA, because the suppression of DNA is actually suppressing the ability to be able to discern the frequencies. But with frequency disruption, you can create something completely different. You can have a frequency sickness to where people will be more prone to subjugation and think that subjugation is sovereignty. It's huge. It's huge. And that overall DNA attack illness is prevalent in here now. So, but great, great question. Something we've got to pick up on something later on. So, but before we get out of here, I just want to what the Navy was basically saying is that they're putting, because it doesn't matter how much, see, most people think because you have a lot of cash is that you have wealthy. Go to Venezuela and see what a lot of cash, people with a lot of cash, and see what their overall purchasing power in that cash is. That means nothing because currency is not money. So the Navy is going through a cycle of junk and trying to make stuff out of junk. And trying to make stuff out of cheaper parts. But then what do you do when you do that? you have more elaborate so-called bells and whistles in a dog and pony show with technology. This is how you have a Tesla vehicle. Instead of having a car that can be made once and outlast the overall life expectancy of the overall owner or controller of that car, to where that car can serve them beyond their overall lifetime and goes further into generations, stuff that really works. And that's what the crisis, part of the crisis that's happening. And these overall chips, they look nice, but that's about it. They don't work. And when they come up against the overall military hardware that does work, it becomes a turkey shoot. They're lame duck. This is why the USS Cole was a lame duck ship sitting there in the Black Sea. Couldn't move, couldn't defend itself, because it was easily overwhelmed by one plane. One plane. Says it all. So, hey, everyone, we got to get ready to get out of here. We'll see you on Great Creator Willing. We'll be back on Monday. We'll pick up on this because we didn't get into the cyber side of it all. So it's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. And before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give one away. Thanks to Jenna and Roz and Scotty for chiming in. Great, great show. Talk to you soon. Peace. Prepare.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.